Happy Saturday, everybody. It is Thought Crime Saturday. We have Tyler Boyer, Blake Neff, Jack Posobiec. We talk about Jack Posobiec's book, which all of you should buy right out of the gate. Also, I want to update that we have a Kate Middleton conversation where Blake speculates that she's dead. There has been some breaking news regarding Kate Middleton. She has cancer, unfortunately. So just keep that in mind as we have this conversation here, because it was recorded before the breaking news. So keep that in mind. We also talk about Trump's potential cabinet and Mayo Clinic becoming super woke. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. That is freedom@charliekirk.com. Subscribe to our podcast. Open up your podcast application and type in Charlie Kirk Show. And get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of The Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. Okay, everybody. Happy Thought Crime Thursday. It is a very important day. Lots of news items backed by popular demand. Or unpopular demand, is Bud Light Boeing Blake.
Doesn't matter. As long as, you know, it's heat. It doesn't matter if they love you or hate you. They just have to think about you.
Tyler, who is doing the best for sleep deprivation.
Yes.
Because we're hiring hundreds of ballot chasers.
I can't remember the last time I slept.
And Jack Posobiec, who, congratulations, Jack, you have a new book coming out. Tell us about it. Plug it. Let's get it to number one and all the stuff. Unhumans?
Let's do it. Yeah, it's called Unhumans. What we've done is we took, people remember the China Files we did on the show, Chronicles Revolution, where Blake actually was the guest host. We've taken that and turned that into a new book all about cultural Marxism, the cultural Marxism that we faced throughout the past, going through chapter by chapter, the systems that these Marxists use in revolutions and uprisings around the world, and how they're using the same type of system now. We've identified the system. We break it out in using military strategy, using elements that I learned when I was in the intelligence community, and then create a system to systemically destroy and smash these revolutions when we see them. So it's called Unhumans. We did the announcement at Mar-a-Lago last night at the National Prayer Rally for Trump. And it's up Amazon. Skyhorse is the publisher. Really excited to be doing this, working with Joshua Lysak on it. And it's, I mean, we're basically, it's going to be one of the biggest software upgrades, I think, that the right has seen in a long time. Because for so long, we complain about cultural Marxism, but we don't actually ever do anything about it. And that's exactly what this book is. We're going to talk, and we're not going to be afraid to talk about the people like Franco and others who have fought Marxist, Joseph McCarthy, by the way, over the years, and actually done something about it.
Very good, Jack. Congratulations on that. Blake, what is our first topic?
Our first topic, it's a barn burner courtesy of Bloomberg. We had a story earlier this week. It's looking into the alleged inner workings at Mar-a-Lago, preparing for Trump's hopeful second term. The headline was that Trump has allegedly ruled out Vivek as a vice presidential pick, might want him as DHS secretary instead. But us and others noticed further in the article a possible red flag. Apparently, former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy is seen as a top candidate to be Trump's chief of staff in a second term. And so the natural question is, what to make of this? Is this a red flag? And if it is, how big a one?
And there were other potential picks, I think, that were also entertained, right? Like Vivek for DHS secretary.
Yeah, Vivek for DHS. It says like Elise Stefanik is not a favorite for vice president anymore, but he likes her for an unnamed cabinet job. It says he'd like to bring Ben Carson back. Not clear what job it would be, but he is, you know, he liked him as a cabinet secretary last time, so could bring him back. So
let me ask Tyler this politically, Tyler, if do you think this sort of a leak whether true or not, is attempted to try to deter base support for Trump, that it's going to be just kind of a personnel issue if Trump were to win another term.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I read it, was that like nefarious people and other people who just like want to find some way to kind of bridge gaps with Kevin McCarthy tried to leak this just to create havoc, you know, within the conservative base. Right now, I think the conservative base is consolidating earlier and faster and better than anyone could have anticipated. And so the media and other nefarious characters are trying to find ways to create splits.
Yeah, the base does not like Kevin McCarthy, but Blake...
But the base wouldn't have liked Reince Priebus either.
But they didn't know Reince.
But as a chief of staff, what about Kevin McCarthy would bother you the most?
I just think what you're going to want in a chief of staff... It seems the reason... First, let's get the reason Trump wants McCarthy, which I think is Trump likes the idea of himself as this big deal maker. He sees deals as Congress produces legislation that he can sign.
And you negotiate.
And you negotiate this. And so it basically, McCarthy was in Congress, was a speaker, has relationships with all these members of Congress. He can hammer out legislation. Trump signs it, gets on stage, says, we made these deals. We've made all these deals on stuff. It's great. I think what we want in a chief, and I think what Trump could easily appreciate in a chief, is you want an administrator. You want an enforcer. You want a details guy who's going to think, okay, what do we actually want to get done with all these different executive departments? What can we do by executive order? How can we achieve Donald Trump's agenda with the presumption that Congress is going to be hostile and slow and not do the things that you campaigned on? And that's the kind of person that you want. I don't necessarily say you want to pick a businessman, but you kind of want the sort of CEO, where that's coming to mind is dictator. We don't want a dictatorship, but like literally a guy who's going to view the executive branch as something, as a weapon to be used for your political agenda.
But let me ask you a question. Do you think Kevin McCarthy would be better than like John Kelly?
You know, I don't know if he would. John Kelly, of course, it ended badly with Trump in a lot of ways. Okay. But John Kelly was an improvement over Reince Priebus
Do you think you need an ideological chief of staff, or do you want someone who really knows how to work DC? I'm not making the case for McCarthy, but I actually don't think it's the dumbest idea I've ever heard.
I think you want either an ideologue or a person who is so committed to just being an effective chief of staff that they execute on that MAGA ideology, even if they don't personally hold to it. Like, they just want to be seen as this super effective Trump enabling chief of staff. But I think ideology is something that you would want. And if you just want someone who's going to do what's easiest, and if they're moderate by disposition, they'll do what we had too much of in 2017. They'll just say, hey, Congress, pass whatever you want, and Trump will sign it because he wants to be able to sign legislation and say it was a great deal. And then we'll get amnesty, we'll get tax cuts on things that we don't want tax cuts on, we'll get, all this China-enabling stuff, we'll get uniparty stuff. And that's not what we want.
Well, I just want to throw this out there, Charlie. So there's a couple of things that are out on that everyone needs to be aware of. So you have Project 2025, which has been covered a lot in the media, which is the Heritage Run, working with all the conservative groups on preparing the foundation
for the next administration.
So it seems like a chief of staff would need to really jive with that group, right? And I don't see Kevin McCarthy really being totally in sync with that, although I don't think there's, you know,
anti-McCarthy people. I just don't think it's the worst. I mean, he was Speaker of the House. I mean,
I'm just saying, if they do all this work ahead of time, they're probably going to lobby for somebody that's going to be like in line. And I don't think McCarthy's probably the top pick out of that group, and AFPI either. I will tell you someone that I think
Brooke
that
would. Rollins is going to be a front runner.
So Brooke, but who else?
Russ Vogt.
Somebody else?
Kevin Roberts from Heritage.
Close.
Not Meadows, or
I would suggest this, Lee Zeldin.
Oh, that's interesting.
So Lee's super involved with these groups, super involved at AFPI, which is Trump's.
And he still has the Congress angle.
And he has the Congress angle, which is, you need that. Like you're saying, Charlie, you need somebody that's an insider that understands what's going on. Lee gets that. And I think that he's respected enough by all
I think Zeldin is a terrific idea. So Jack, I want to get your opinion here. again, I always got along with Kevin. He treated our Turning Point USA students so well on the Hill. So I just, considering how I was not treated always great by White House chief of staffs, I selfishly am like, hey, if Kevin was chief of staff, I actually think that'd be kind of great for Turning Point USA. I'm just being very transparent.
Yeah.
Because, right, Tyler, he brought our student body presidents and treated them like rock stars.
No, you know.
And that was great. So I just want to, I want to make sure we're clear on Kevin.
The ideological differences, the thing I've always told people, I disagree with Kevin McCarthy on a lot of things, right? Like on his, on his stances ideologically. I appreciate when people are honest ideologues, when they, when he's,
He's not ideological. He doesn't have deep, like, Lee held.
Well, I mean, he's a moderate, right? So he's an honest moderate. So versus, we sometimes have dishonest moderates who pretend to be conservative who are actually moderates. Kevin McCarthy's always been, I'm a moderate. This is who I am. Da da da. Da. And like, I'll work with you on X, Y, and Z. We also have conservatives who actually turn out to be moderates. So or people who pretend to be conservatives who turn out to be moderates. I prefer an honest moderate over a dishonest conservative.
I agree. So, Jack, sorry, it's hard. Just keep talking over you. Your thoughts, Jack?
Yeah, so kind of echoing what you say, I think that Kevin was great in terms of the way that he was able to be open with TPUSA. I think that he was very open with a lot of people in the conservative movement and certainly on the MAGA part side of the house. I agree with what Tyler's saying about his stance on a lot of the issues. I guess my one concern, though, regarding that specifically and why I'd be why I would say Lee Zeldin ahead of McCarthy for chief of staff is that with Zeldin, you have this situation where people, you know, I think everybody on all sides of the Republican Party has a lot of goodwill, or I should say Zeldin has a lot of goodwill with them. Whereas with Kevin, I feel like you risk kind of reigniting the entire rift that led to him being pushed out as speaker to begin with. And I'm not saying that he isn't qualified or anything like that. I'm just saying that it feels like it would reignite a lot of the things that have kind of simmered down since then.
Yeah, just the best example would be someone who is like the unknown CEO of a mid-major publicly traded company that took it from good to great.
Yeah, and you want it, because what's the problem we had so much in the first Trump administration? You know, you do an executive order and then the staff would just, you know, not do it. We've had James Bacon on the show and he talked about this. You have those executive personnel parasites. They slow play everything. They ignore things. They misinterpret your orders. I feel like you want a chief of staff who's going to be tracking those things. And, you know, he follows up on it to not 2 months later, not 2 years later, but 2 days later, 2 weeks later, says, why didn't you do this? Oh, you're ignoring it. You're fired.
I think Vivek would be perfect. I think the only problem is Vivek wants to be president too bad to be chief of staff.
He's,
and by the way, that's not like a negative. He literally ran for president.
I think, you want a guy who recedes into the background. I mean, how many things do you remember Joe Biden's chief of staff doing?
Ron Klain is mentioned the least of any chief of staff ever. That's why Rahm Emanuel
didn't
work out.
As disastrous as their presidency is, they do a lot of things. Someone's organizing all those lawsuits against Elon Musk. Someone's organizing.
You know who would be a good archetype is Tim Cook. So Tim Cook.
Tim Apple.
Yes, Tim Apple.
Tim Apple.
Tim Apple. Now, again, Tim Apple, he de-celebritized Apple successfully. Apple was a little bit of like the Steve Jobs celebrity cult while he was alive. Would you agree?
Yeah.
It was like, this was Steve Jobs, Apple, and Tim Cook. I definitely like, he's the opposite of Elon Musk. He doesn't like the attention. He keeps his head down. He delivers. Apple is more valuable than ever before. I kind of like the Tim Cook archetype where it's just like, I'm just going to show up at 6 a.m. Yes, sir. I'm going to fulfill your agenda. Tell you if I agree or disagree.
And
but you also
then their life doesn't revolve around media cycles.
No, that's what
you,
I'm saying.
You want a guy who just is not, you know, the press is going to freak out. They're
honestly,
gonna do hit pieces.
You
and
need someone,
just...
the new White House chief of staff should be like, you're never doing an interview.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what we have a comms department. I'm here to run the government. You, by the way, you have Trump who's like,
here's
Trump.
A crazy idea. What if we didn't even have a comms department? What if you just said the White House is going to do stuff and
no,
you know,
you need a comms department.
I don't know. I think
for
it'd be fun.
A Trump White House. You
I
need
think
a comms
it would
department.
Be so fun if you just literally never had to do a White House press conference. But
no. You need, although if there's a national crisis, what are you going to do?
That's fair. Then you can do it. You still have it. Although I want to highlight this line in the Bloomberg piece because it is just so typical of Trump. Those who have participated in the discussions about the cabinet describe a quintessentially Trump experience in which the former president peppers the conversation with political observations and media critiques as a steady stream of food is served while he keeps an eye on cable news or chooses his favorite musical selections over dinner at his Mar-a-Lago club. I guess you've been there and I haven't, but it sounds like how it's been described.
Read that end part again.
Steady stream of food is served while he keeps an eye on cable news or chooses his favorite musical selections.
No, of course. I've said that before on the program where he'll say, give me the iPad. And he has loves Phantom of the Opera. And he loves this song. You guys got to get this song. It is with, I think it's with like Lionel Richie and like Fibonacci. And it's like where they did it's James Brown and Fibonacci. And they have this like joint song they did together. It's like Trump's favorite song. And he plays it all the time. And I'm going to find it on YouTube. It's a legitimately beautiful song. But here's the thing. Trump, to his credit, is actually the most open-minded, least rigid person on the planet. And this, he gets painted as being like super ideological, or he will entertain any idea.
That's good and bad.
It's really good and really bad, because sometimes there's ideas where it's like, no.
It's Pavarotti.
I'm sorry. Did I say Pavarotti? What did I say?
You mentioned the Fibonacci
sequence.
I'm all screwed up.
That's funny.
It's okay.
It is, because there's so many. So it's like a remix of It's a Man's World. Right,
yeah, no, I'm all screwed up.
There are so
many
people.
Yes, I found it. It's a Man World. Yeah, okay. This is it.
Yeah, it's really good. No, it's really good. It's just a good song.
I'm sorry.
It's just there were so many people in the first administration where you just feel like that was a huge missed opportunity. But there's also people, I won't name any names, but there are people I know who got appointed by Trump. Some of them are still in the government in various places where you just think no one but Trump would have ever picked that person, and they were a great choice. And so it's, you live by the Trump, die by the Trump. But I think my leaning towards is I hope that Kevin McCarthy is one of those ideas he entertains that he doesn't do.
I will say that the idea of a no media, no ascension. So you need someone that is, it's not a necessarily a huge step up, but it's a lateral move to become chief of staff, meaning that they're already at the height of the game. Again, I think of just someone who is a CEO of a mid-major company with like a $30 to $40 billion market cap. The problem is all those people are woke and they would never do it. That just shows up, because here's the problem that people don't understand, is that to live at that game, and Tyler, you know this, by managing that many staff, you do not sleep. You have to be able to always be on your game. You cannot leak. You have to be so precise. You have to be able to deal with different people. It's a skill set that is really, really hard to find.
Really rare. And there's not very many that have done it. Even out of the biggest conservative organizations that exist, most don't have that many staff.
No, they don't.
And you're dealing with the top line personalities, like you mentioned. All these people who are serving in these positions are on their own alpha dogs. So you have to deal with Trump. You have to deal with all of these cabinet members. You have to deal with everyone that you have to actually run the office in the West Wing. You have to be the first point of contact ahead of the president for almost every. How many people have actually done that? There's very few, and the ones that have rarely done that are in and out because it's so taxing. That's why you really need somebody that has, like you said, a big personality, that has the capacity to, take in a lot of arrows, that has had a bunch of arrows shot at that person.
Yes.
That's why a political person makes a ton of sense. Someone that's served in office.
It's just the problem is that people that have served in office, they don't have the work.
Most don't have that.
They will be so overwhelmed by 7 straight days of work from 7 a.m. to
midnight. And that's why I say you do need the detail guy, though, because we know Trump is not that kind of detail guy.
That's where Tim Cook comes in.
Exactly. And you also know we have a huge problem with people undermining you. So we're either going to need, 17 cabinet secretaries who are detail people. But we know that won't be the case, because some of them will just be, we'll pick them to round out the cabinet in all those ways.
All right, we're going to play 20 seconds of this, then we'll talk about our partner with Rumble. Jack, did you want to jump in?
Well, I guess the one thing that everybody has to throw out there is what if one of those people's name rhymes with Charlie Kirk, and if he were asked to go into the admin?
I would be a very bad chief of staff. I would not be a good – there's roles I would be good with. Chief of staff would not be one of them, because it's not CEO. That's what's important. It's not CEO. It's more just kind of like the highest level manager, right? It's like a manager more than it is a CEO.
We would not have a problem with getting, well, at least 6 days a week of effort out of Chief of Staff.
That's Charlie. Right. But could you imagine? Charlie, they're putting nuclear weapons in Cuba. It's Shabbat, Blake. Tell them to wait till Sunday. All right, 79. Let's just get a little taste of what Donald Trump plays at Mar-a-Lago. Just play 20 seconds of this. Literally his favorite song.
This is a man's world.
It's a man's world.
This is a man's world.
So when I say he plays this loud, you cannot hear yourself think.
You know, they called James Brown the hardest working man in showbiz.
And it just goes all the way
up. There you go, that's right.
As loud as it gets. And he has the iPad and he's doing stuff on it. All right, let's talk about Rumble. Are you tired of getting a surprise when you see your cloud service bill every month? Well, our friends at Rumble have done it again. The new Rumble cloud services are coming this spring. The Rumble has built the cloud for the parallel economy. The disruptive Rumble cloud pricing model will blow away the big tech clouds with big savings and more predictable budgeting. And like Rumble Video, you don't have to worry about cancellation on Rumble Cloud. Exclusively for friends of Rumble, sign up today at friends.rumble.cloud and receive 30% off for 3 months of your cloud compute subscription, which will be available for purchases later this quarter. Rumble Cloud Services are the essential cloud services you need for any size business to be able to innovate and grow. Go to friends.rumble.cloud and sign up today. That is friends.rumble.cloud. So check it out right now, friends.rumble.cloud. What do we got next?
Our next thing is, we normally don't talk about this sort of thing, but it piled up into such a big furball that we actually have a lot to say about it. It's the royal family, Charlie.
So, you know, I was, you guys proposed this in the chat, and I actually have become over the years like a soft lover of the idea of the monarchy. I used to not be. Oh, you don't
you're
like
giving it. You're rejecting. You're just rejecting the principles of the American Revolution,
yeah,
man.
You don't like tradition. Yeah, that's fine. I just inherently, if something has lasted for a while, I have like this primal instinct to protect it from the bacterial infection.
Wait, but this
I'm a true trad.
Hold on, I'm getting there, Jack. Right. I'm getting it. So then,
No, that's what Trump said too on this Nigel interview. He's like, I like the concept of a royal family.
Yes. Okay. So anyway, I get on all these goofy Telegram channels that I'd say they have like a 1 out of 10 hit rate of stuff that are right, and sometimes they're talking about stuff like, Joe Biden is actually a mutant from Neptune. It's like, okay, well, maybe. But anyway, so the last week they've been posting these pictures that Kate Middleton is dead and it's a body double. I've been paying attention to it. Next thing you know, Blake, who's like the most normie person I know, is like, yeah, Kate Middleton might be dead. I'm like,
okay.
So walk our audience through this for the uninitiated.
Alrighty. So full background. I suspect a lot of people know this, but in case they don't, this all started around the new year. Kate Middleton, the Princess of Wales, all those titles she has now, they announced she's going to do a surgery, an abdominal surgery. They didn't say for what, but it was apparently pretty involved, and they said she would be not doing public-facing stuff until after Easter. So everyone's like, we haven't seen Kate Middleton anywhere for months, but she has literally said she would not be out in public. But it caused all this rumor mill, and then this went into overdrive about a week ago. We have 73 up there. They put out some photo for, I can't even remember what the excuse was, but some holiday thing. And they're like, here's a photo of Kate Middleton with her kids. And it turned out this photo was touched up digitally. People looked at it.
It was more than touched up.
But when people started to call it that it was touched up, people were like, no, it's a conspiracy theory. It's not touched up. But it actually was.
It literally was touched up. And she apologized for it. She said it was just a minor thing. And then we don't know where it was taken. Some people have theorized it's a photo that predates her surgery, notably.
Yeah.
And so this just, people lost their minds. So people have speculated that she's dead, that she's in a coma, that she's like splitting with the Prince of Wales because he's having an affair with this other woman, or that he impregnated this other woman. I
mean, all rich Europeans have affairs. So that's just kind of...
Yeah, it's just, you know, Europeans don't have our sense of right and wrong on these things.
No, but literally, European culture is affair culture.
Well, French culture.
It's permeated almost all.
Royal culture.
Yeah, and royal, of course. They're almost all...
Yeah.
Polygamous. Yeah. Not polygamous, but the polyamorous, whatever.
Even weirder though, the other day, so you can put up 71. So there was this video that went around, or photo, that they were out shopping together, and people are, the conspiracy is that that's not her. That's not Kate Middleton. Now, crazy thing is, Kate Middleton does have a body double and has used a body double in the past. This is a known fact. Now, the explanation
Wait,
is that
what?
They just use her in a minor way.
So which is the recent picture?
So can we tell the difference? I don't know. Allegedly, the one with the watermark
is the recent picture.
But people are saying the heights are all
off. I would note.
Oh, right? Yeah,
so I would note that it looks like she lost weight, which is something that you might happen if you were in, you know, you're in traction from surgery. If you're recuperating, you might lose a bunch of weight, especially abdominal surgery, something stomach, you know, digestion, etc.
Yeah, let's show 72. This is the sort of stuff people are doing. They're saying that she's not the right height. Now, I think it's pretty obvious this could just be a perspective thing. Like, is she a little bit behind William in one of the photos? But people are losing their minds over this. And I've decided, you know, it's thought crime. We're allowed to embrace wild theories. So I think I'm just going to take the bold stance. Kate Middleton's dead. William killed her, and he should be in jail for it.
Wow. I didn't expect that from
everyone blames me. Bowen everyone Blake. Attacks me. I always believe the normie thing. I always believe the mainstream thing. So I'm going to go against type, and I'm going to say this is a royal murder mystery. You know, it's even possible. Maybe have you seen that Face Off movie, the John Woo movie?
No.
Well, you should watch it. And two, maybe it's Kate Middleton's face on the mistress's body, and like they just totally swapped her out.
I feel like I can speak to this a little bit because my wife has Crohn's, so there's just like unknown surgery. So when this first got announced, people thought, oh well, she must have some kind of, you know, disease like Crohn's or something like that, where that's why she's getting surgery. And by the way, you have to go through many, many different surgeries throughout your lifetime if you have, you know, some kind of a disease that's relevant to that. So it's actually not shocking at all from what they said, is like that she's undergoing the surgery in January. It's going to be a while before she recovers. And a lot of these are super invasive. They take out big chunks of your intestine, and you have to do that many times throughout your life. It takes months to recover from that. So I'm not shocked at all that they wouldn't want her out in public. But the sketchy thing is, like, why are you putting out fake pictures? Why are there like potentially body double situations going out? If she said she wasn't going to be out in public until April, why is she doing that? Right. Like, that's the question that I think that's brought everybody.
Yeah. The big meta issue, of course, is it unhealthy for America that we like care about this to any degree?
Well, I just think we care about government corruption and like,
yeah, but it's government lines.
It's a foreign governments, and it's even corruption. It's they're just sort of designated state-owned celebrities in the UK in like a weird way.
I think it's more likely she got an invasive surgery. That, I mean, she's a royal, so you know, like they don't want to see these people like recovering, and they don't want. There's like a bunch of people like that are looking at you and like how you're parenting and how you're doing your job and all that stuff. So it's just easier for them probably just to disappear. And it was probably just a stupid decision on behalf of the social media team of the royal family to be like, well, people are getting concerned, so let's just do this. Like, and that was a dumb idea too.
Or the booster shot killed her.
It could be.
See, we're moving Blake along.
Look, it's just,
now I could sign up for that. It was the eighth booster brought to you by Pfizer.
Just taking them out. It's like the new guillotine.
Well, I mean, if you have if she did undergo surgery because she has like a disease of some type that required it, and she was boosted multiple times, it would put her at significant risk. An autoimmune disease? If she has an autoimmune disease?
Yeah, I mean, you should not take the mRNA gene shot if you have the autoimmune disease.
Final kind of thought crimey issue is there are, all kidding from me aside, there are like quite a few accounts on Twitter and such that are, I guess, conservative coded, that have fully leaped into the, you know, Kate Middleton's dead, body double, the British deep state took her out. And I guess it is worth asking, is this a problem that we have on the right? Like, do we have too many people who believe weird stuff?
We've just been lied to so much that it is now our it is our default setting, right, Jack? Can you explain?
Well, when you've been lied to so many times and you're used to sort of being in this frame that the media is always lying to you, that the government and specifically the government's always lying to you, or, you know, government associated media in many of these cases, that you sort of develop this, you know, I guess you could call it a habit. I guess you call it maybe a process or a frame that you're always sort of looking for the angle on everything. And you're always your prior assumption is going to be that, you know, that these people are lying to you. Personally, you know, I would look at it and say, you know, I think that this is a case where the British media has, you know, obviously anything with the royal family is going to be huge fodder in British media. I mean, they just love any kind of scandal with the royals. But I would also point out that this is the first time in a long time that there's been a scandal with Kate and William, because for years prior to this, it's been all about Harry and Meghan Markle. And, you know, Nigel Farage even asked Trump if he would consider deporting Prince Harry over this. 100% I guess. I think it had to do with drug use. And then he, you know, he lied on his visa application, because in his book, he talks about using heroin around the time that he was applying for his U.S. visa and all this. And so he could have lied. And so Trump kind of says, et cetera, that maybe they, you know, they wanted to kind of like achieve some parity with, you know, with Meghan and Harry, and say, oh, we've gone on them a little bit too much. And, you know, here's Kate and William. We've got to dirty them up a little bit. So let's go in on this. And of course, you know, that fits with the, you know, the sort of woke slant that we've seen from, you know, the BBC going in and, you know, race swapping like all of British history, and, you know, Netflix doing the exact same thing with a lot of these historical shows that are set in the UK. So it's like, hey, what if we get rid of Kate as the queen? Does that mean that Meghan could maybe be the queen, and that'll be like the next phase of it? I don't know. Just kind of seems like something they would want to be able to do.
So let's go through the most likelihood of what this actually is.
Okay. I think we could probably do top six. How about? So number six, least likely, is she went in for abdominal surgery and is under the weather and has to recover. That's boring. And we live in Donald Trump's earth,
why wouldn't they just say that if that was the case?
They have in fact just said that. But Charlie, that's the boring answer. That's not exciting. So therefore, it's not true. We live in Donald Trump's world. The most interesting thing is more likely to be true. So then I bet for me,
this is an alternate timeline that we're living in.
For number five, I'd say the number five most possible is she's been arrested for murder.
Oh,
they have found out she took out. She's the queen.
She's currently at Gitmo.
She's been arrested. Oh. Possibly might be executed at Gitmo.
Real raw royals.
Number four is all the rumor. You know, the affair, divorce stuff. You know, I could buy that being true. You know, like, and then maybe number three is, have we considered, you know, they say it's an abdominal surgery, but what if it's a little bit lower? If you catch my
Blake,
drift.
We have to
entertain the possibility that surgery has a long recovery time and would keep you away from the public eye. I can say no more. No.
That the princess of England would be having the opposite surgery as the first lady of France in that situation?
Or the former first lady of America?
Hillary Clinton?
Barbara Bush? I don't know what surgery Barbara Bush had.
I can't remember what option we're on, but obviously the most likely result is, of course, that she was killed by William, and he should be in jail, and he's going to get away with it because the deep state lets its actors get away with whatever they want. And that's the tragedy here. That's why we threw off the British in the 1700s, because they wrote in the Declaration, they said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that the British royals kill their wives and replace them with body doubles. And so we're going to get rid of that. That's what they said in the Declaration of Independence. And if you disagree with the Declaration of Independence, that's illegal. You'll go to jail.
I want to tell you guys about, I, for one, they've edited this. That's so funny. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you hate bad coffee? I, for one, really hate awful coffee, which is why I'm so excited to introduce you to, guys, to the company revolting against really bad coffee, 1775 Coffee Company. In 1775, the world awakened to a new era, and now 1775 Coffee Company is bringing you a coffee that embodies that revolutionary spirit. Crafted with passion and protection, our beans are ethically and exclusively sourced from the finest coffee farms of Bolivia. What's the capital of Bolivia?
La Paz.
There you go. 1775 Coffee Company's Farm to Cup journey ensures the highest quality authenticity and sustainability from start to finish. With each sip, your palate will recognize and appreciate the dedication and passion that goes into crafting the single source brew. 1775 Coffee Company takes pride in offering customers a truly exceptional coffee experience with their premium coffee collection. Their dedication to this revolution extends beyond the realm of taste. Safeguarding freedom of speech is critical right now, which is why 1775 Coffee Company has joined forces with Rumble in defense of one of our most fundamental rights, freedom of speech. Coffee that's sure to awaken all senses, including the sense of freedom. Choose 1775 Coffee by going to 1775coffee.com/thoughtcrimes. Use promo code ThoughtCrimes for 10% off at checkout on your first order. That is 1775 Coffee, brewed to perfection, crafted with revolution. Revolting against crappy coffee, farm to cup, Bolivia bean farm to Florida roasters. Wake up and taste freedom. Wake up every day and choose freedom. That is 1775coffee.com/thoughtcrimes. Okay, what do we have next?
Speaking of revolution and speaking of great taste, we're going to a place where they know what tastes great and it's people. Jack, let's talk about Haiti.
Well, Haiti, you know, so much to say, so much deliciousness to talk about there. Now, fortunately, Thought Crime comes out on Thursday. Fridays in Lent, as you know, I can't eat meat. So I'm very glad that we're talking about Haiti on a Thursday.
So do you want to go deeper, Jack, into that? Or because not everyone knows that that they're changing the Big Mac in Port-au-Prince.
They're changing the Okay, so here's what's going on in Haiti. So a lot of people have probably heard this by now. People have, you know, but for anyone who hasn't, you know, there's basically a complete, and there has been a complete lack of government in Haiti for about 3 years since the president was summarily assassinated pretty early on in the Biden administration. And so they had this sort of new warlord slash provisional president kind of thing no one had ever actually elected or voted for. And he had been quasi in power for a couple of years. Yeah, he's now been deposed by the cannibal gangs who are running amok all over Port-au-Prince, Haiti's capital. That government has completely fallen. He's now stepped down. The president stepped down. The prime minister has stepped down. I'm not entirely sure how many have fled the country at this point. But what's really amazing about Haiti, and we actually write this in, because all this was going on, we decided to throw this into Unhumans in the book, and we did a whole section on it because a lot of people don't understand how Haiti became the way it is. But a lot of people, and I don't know if we have the map handy of the island of Hispaniola, as the entire island is called, is that Haiti shares half of its island with the island with the country of Dominican Republic. Dominican Republic was the Spanish colony. Haiti was the French colony. The difference being between the two is that during the French Revolution, the slaves slash former slaves of Haiti decided to rise up and essentially commit genocide against all the French people that lived on their half of the island, slaughter all of them, the women, the screaming children, specifically along racial lines. Even, by the way, after the revolutionary government, and Blake and I discussed this, revolutionary government had freed the slaves, didn't matter, kill all the French anyway. So they did that. And I mean, you can just, it's amazing that this is a distinction that can now be seen from outer space, this borderline, because you have one country that over 200 years ago, 220 years ago, was founded in this sort of quasi proto-Marxoid slave revolt. And then another country, which was founded by, you know, a serious country, Spanish Empire, later gained its independence, fought many wars against Haiti. And you can see one is like a lush tropical resort and the other is a complete wasteland filled with cannibal gangs.
And it's important to note that Haiti is legitimately infested with demonic voodoo. Can you talk about this, Blake?
Yeah, I mean, well, so I'm weirdly more sympathetic
comes
to
from
Haiti
in the Western Hemisphere.
Say that again, Jack.
Well, so voodoo, you know, it's really where Haiti is, where voodoo comes from in the Western Hemisphere. So it's brought from a lot of much more ancient tribal African practices that were brought along, you know, again, you know, forcefully brought to the Caribbean. But it really was Haiti where voodoo made itself, you know, planted its flag in the Western world, in the Western Hemisphere. You see this spread throughout the other islands. You see, you know, these types of practices and a lot of like blending of West African traditions with Christianity and Catholicism. Again, Spanish-French empires, you get Catholicism there. And they come up with these very bizarre, very dark, demonic, occult practices that are going on, in many cases, completely subverting Christianity and Christian symbols for use in these practices. And so you'll have cases where, you know, the killing and the ritual killing and the ritual ingestion of flesh, let's just say it, ingestion of flesh, is done as part of these rituals. In fact, during the slave revolt, or one of the early revolts going on back in 1804, one of the leaders of this was himself a shaman of sorts, a witchcraft shaman of sorts, and they were sacrificed animals, pass around the cup of blood for everyone to take part in, to kind of give them the blood rage, and then they would go off and start killing all of the plantation owners.
I mean, what's crazy with voodoo is it's very much it's a belief with like a, where the supernatural has a lot of impact on your life. So they very much believe in the power of magic, that you can put curses on people, that you can cast spells on people. And, you know, and the famous voodoo doll is just sort of a fictional trope version of this. I don't know if they specifically do it that way, but the general idea that someone can put a curse on you, and there's all sorts of people who have magic, so there's witches everywhere. So there's a voodoo idea that like women can turn into these sort of like animals and like suck your blood at night, or there's like another cult where people can turn into dogs, and of course zombies. The word zombie comes from voodoo.
Yes. Yeah, so zombieism is really from this entire culture.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is where it comes
from. And in their version of it, it's more like they can kind of enslave a person, like they can kind of kill you but control your body. And I believe, I don't have it in front of me, but I think there's cases where the power of suggestion is so strong that like people have basically become zombies because they believe that they are a zombie, and it's so powerful on it. But the big picture here, of course, is there's all this trouble in Haiti yet again. If you're 30 years old, this is probably about the eighth or ninth time there's been some like, oh, massive crisis in Haiti, and the government's a mess, and there's gangs in the streets, and they're doing all of this stuff, and there's never any progress. And it circles back around to a discussion we've had on here before. What if like the big picture thought crime here is, should somebody colonize Haiti, basically?
No. Why would you want that?
There's really no reason to do it. I think the only reason to do it is...
How about you colonize Greenland?
That would be a great idea. Okay, I'm fully in favor of that.
Tons of land.
All for it.
Okay, maybe it's that largely. Literally, what if...
You have Nook.
What if you said, like, China can colonize Haiti?
I think it would be terrific. I think that I think China should have to try to figure out Haiti.
Because there's sort of this... It gets at, I think, the flaws or the shortcomings of, if you want to call it like our global neoliberal order post-Cold War, where what we do is we very much perpetuate a system that is clearly essentially hopeless. Haiti's government is a complete calamitous disaster, and it is not serving the people of Haiti, and it's not serving any of their neighbors for us to prop up what is clearly a disaster where, oh, just an armed mercenary gang can murder your president, and they literally can't even hold elections anymore. It's so bad we can't even tell, are they canceling elections because they just want to be dictators, or are they canceling elections because they are not even capable of organizing a vote by the public? That is the level of state failure that we are at. And in the past, 1,000 years ago, it was not possible to have a failed state like this, because if you were that much of a disaster, your neighbors came in and just took you over. And now instead, what we do is we have the international community, and we have the United Nations, and we have humanitarian missions, and we're basically just dumping you know, food and medical supplies into this anarchic, you know, disaster state.
I don't know if it's fixable. And one, the reason is that I think, first of all, I think part of the country is literally under a spiritual oppression. I've talked to missionaries and missionaries that have gone there, and they say they've seen the darkest stuff that a human being can see. In fact, I know people that have come that went to Haiti passively as like agnostic atheists, and they came back searching for Jesus because they saw like legit demonic activity.
Whoa. Do they say any more?
Yeah, there was one guy who saw somebody who literally didn't sleep for 2 weeks and would just like run around and not sleep for 2 weeks, like ran through the whole island with like supernatural type capacity. There are claims that people have seen like quasi levitation stuff,
yeah.
Like almost head spinning type stuff. And then Andrew says this was very common. Yeah. Here's one that when Andrew was in Haiti, there were common stories about people turning into cats at night, which I don't know. They all knew someone that turned into cats. Again, I'm not sure about that. I haven't heard that. But this like supernatural energy, or just also the stuff where, you know, you look in the Hollywood films where someone like looks possessed, right? Imagine like entire towns that look that way.
Yeah.
Where it's just they, and then there's a lot of churches there too, and it's growing, but like Haitian voodoo culture is legit. Like 1 out of 3 people in Haiti participate, and they sacrifice animals and they do like pagan blood rituals.
It doesn't seem to have worked out for them.
No, I mean, yeah, look, pagan, show me a pagan culture that sustainably can survive. And, you know, there's a reason why the Aztecs are
India?
No longer around. That's a good point. Can India survive? We'll see. And or is India just on its is it exhausting the jet fuel of, you know, English colonial culture?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a thought crime.
I'm just asking. Was India great before it got colonized?
Yeah, but they have a caste system.
They have a terrible caste system.
I mean, but their caste system is what keeps them afloat.
What's crazy is what is at risk of destroying India is they got one of the most toxic intellectual imports from the West, which is affirmative action, and they do it by caste, yeah. And it's a colossal disaster. They're one of the only countries that does affirmative action that is as stupid and bizarre as the way we do it in America, where if you're like in one of the 4 kind of normal castes, you're discriminated against, yes, systemically, and you instead it's the like tribes and other backward castes, I think is what they call them.
Yeah, but that's the best management for the lifestyle of what you guys are talking about, where it's like essentially a free-for-all society that exists, which is, I mean, that's why that it's basically plugging the dam on that allows that to exist. Haiti doesn't have it.
I have a heart for the people of Haiti, and I visit the Caribbean a fair amount. You don't have to live like that. I mean, there are islands that enter the second world, and mm-hmm. they're not totally anarchy, and they're poor, but you know they have like resorts, and you know Barbados, for example, Turks and
I mean
Caicos,
Dominican Republic,
Grand Cayman.
Dominican Republic is a lot island. Like Haiti, same island, and it is
Santo Domingo's
literally, I think, more than 15 times richer than Haiti. Now, I do want to push back on one thing, which is Andrew and others are pointing out, you know, they revolted too early, and I will say what we really need to blame here, and it's important to give right blame to these people because they're to blame for a lot of things, is the French. French are bad.
The French and the Germans
they
are
gave
perfectly
us,
fine antagonists in all things.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, they gave us all this adultery stuff that's causing all the problems, allegedly,
that's right.
In the royal family. And they gave us Haiti. And the reason I say they gave us Haiti is Haiti, as far as, you know, we get all of our, you know, horror porn about slavery in the U.S. before the Civil War, you know, that 12 years of slave stuff, you know, whipping people. Like, Haiti, run by the French, was not like the antebellum South. Haiti was run like a Nazi death camp. It was sugar plantations. And sugar plantations in the 1700s were so terrible that you could not have replacement-level population. It was constant decrease.
Jeez.
So what you'd do is you'd constantly ship in slaves from Africa. It was estimated that a field hand in a Haitian sugar plantation had a life expectancy of about 4 years, like from when they start working in there. And so that is why they revolted and killed everybody. It wasn't merely, you know, we want to be free. It was straight up, if we don't do this odds are all of us will be dead in 5 years because of how horrifying this is. And so I do want to give that concession that Haiti is super messed up, but much of this is downstream of when you have a catastrophically horrible way of running your country, such as anything set up by the French, these are the end results you get. And we still feel the ramifications 200 years later. And so we can even draw the comparison there between Haiti and Britain, where Britain has an orderly emancipation process for its colonies and the slaves in those colonies. And the result is that anything that's still a British colony today is pretty good. Any place that was a British colony is doing a lot better than anywhere that was a French colony. What are the French colonies? Niger, other parts of West Africa, Ivory Coast, torn by civil war frequently, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia. And then it's like British colonies, Hong Kong,
India,
Barbados. Gibraltar.
Barbados is amazing. You know, George Washington went down to Barbados?
He did.
That's your fun fact of the day.
And that's also where Alexander Hamilton was from, right?
It might have been Hamilton. One of them went all the way down to Barbados.
Well, Hamilton, I believe, was born there, and then he moved to the U.S., and that's why we got that musical where, you know, everyone is an immigrant and they rap and stuff.
That's right. You know, yeah, George Washington's Journey to Barbados, mountvernon.com.org. George Washington visited Barbados, proved to be a turning point in his life, a dividing line between...
A turning point, USA?
That's right. And you know who's also from Barbados? Rihanna.
Oh, well, so.
Here's your fun fact. Next topic.
So our next topic. Oh, wow, you're shopping at me. So the next topic actually relates a lot to what we just mentioned about India. So we have a tweet from the Mayo Clinic.
Yeah.
Or rather, it's from Libs of TikTok. Do we have it? I just didn't have it ready to go. So let's get me the link here. But the Mayo Clinic posted this. Okay, number 68. They posted
this is scary stuff, a job thing here.
Let me just get to it here.
As you get to it, can I give some background?
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
So anyone who has, let's say, a serious medical problem within the kind of healthcare world, Mayo is considered to be the gold standard, right? Yeah. And it's from Rochester, Minnesota. It was founded by, I believe, the Mayo brothers. It was like Will and Charlie, if I'm not mistaken. And they started this in Rochester, Minnesota, and they have a plant here. They have a plant campus, two of them, here in the Valley. They have one in Fountain Hills and one in Scottsdale. They have one in Jacksonville, Florida, and it's considered to be the best research. And to give an idea, they will do $19 billion in revenue this year.
I'm more of a butter guy myself.
$16 billion in revenue. So they're considered the highest quality of American healthcare. Keep going.
So we have it now. So this is a job posting, I believe actually here in Phoenix, although it's affiliated with the Mayo Clinic. This is for a licensed practical nurse in ambulatory cardiology. Cardiology is your heart. This is important medicine.
Which is the number one killer of Americans over the age of 30 is heart disease.
Heart disease, heart problems. And so this is a job description by a group, Jobs for Humanity. Jobs for Humanity is partnering with Mayo Clinic to build an inclusive and just employment ecosystem. Ecosystem, always a word to run away from very quickly these days. Therefore, we prioritize individuals coming from the following communities. Prepare yourself. Refugee, neurodivergent, that means autistic or mentally ill, single parent, blind or low vision, deaf or hard of hearing, Black, Hispanic, Asian, military veteran, the elderly, the LGBTQ, and this is the best part, justice-impacted individuals. What is a justice-impacted individual?
A criminal.
It is, yes, but we don't use those terms anymore. They're impacted by the justice system. They were just living their lives.
Something happened to them.
They were going around, you know,
they were just raping
living
a woman,
their life,
and
living their life,
you know,
and then the justice system just comes on and impacts people. Anyone can get impacted by the justice system. Just they're impacting everyone. We have entire neighborhoods where there's just impacting going on way more often, and we can't appreciate that from our position of privilege, that we can't appreciate what it's like to be impacted by the justice system, Charlie.
This is one of the scarier trends. If Mayo Clinic is now hiring, they're hiring people just because they're autistic, blind or low vision. This is for an ambulatory cardiology. So I would imagine this is somebody who is riding along in an ambulance and or they're like the first response if somebody has a heart attack and they're blind. Look, so you got someone who can't see that's going to try to read an EKG. If you can't see, how on earth can you take somebody's blood pressure? I'm sorry.
I mean, if you don't know if you're a boy or a girl, how would you want somebody working on you that you're not sure?
This happened already.
Basic biology as a doctor.
Or hard of hearing. Sir, what's your medical history? I have a stent in my heart. What? What'd you say? I can't hear. You got to speak louder.
I mean, this is...
So no, there's a story in the UK a couple of months ago. I just pulled it up here it's, you know, Somerset, they call them care homes, it's nursing homes here. There was a 91-year-old woman who fell down the stairs and then was trapped like under a stair lift. And they had these like, these basically gypsies were working there, these you know asylum seekers or whatever they call them over there, and they didn't have to pass what they call the secure English language test, which is supposed to be used for a foreign worker. And so when they called 999, which is their equivalent of the 911, the operators, and so the EMTs, and this is what Charlie was getting at, that took the call couldn't understand what they were saying, other than that, you know, obviously they could tell where they were coming from because of caller ID. So they knew it was probably something with an elderly person. They didn't know how to classify it. They didn't know the condition of the person. They didn't know what was going on because they couldn't speak English. So now imagine you're in a situation like that, and you're now dealing with people that are supposed to be caring for you or your elderly loved ones, and there's an emergency situation, and now the people who are supposed to be making the emergency call can't speak English, operators can't understand what's going on, don't understand the severity. By the time they did actually show up, the woman was already dead.
And
guess what? This is going to keep happening more and more.
And remember, the explanation in the UK and every other country for why you need basically open borders is they'll do these healthcare jobs that we need to, you know, keep us going.
By the way, it is jobs that Americans will do. We have plenty of Americans that are studying.
It pays pretty well.
There's plenty of Americans that want to go into healthcare. But again, this is the top. This is the creme de la creme.
No, no,
Mayo Clinic.
Charlie, it's not that plenty of – we have – jobs. So this is the crazy part of the whole thing, and I'll kind of explain it just real briefly. Our boards of regents, the boards that manage our universities, are instituting DEI culture that limits our ability to train people to become nurses,
yes,
to become doctors, which leads to a doctor shortage, which is what we have right now in most places, which is now leading full circle to, let's put autistic people in and people with mental illness and other things, in addition to blind, deaf, like everything else that we're saying, to fill jobs, because these same policies limited the ability for people to get into to train in the first place. So this is full circle intentional community and society destructive policies.
Well, so that gets at it. I think this sort of thing from Mayo Clinic, it's a lot like the pilots thing, where it really shows you how deep the belief is here, because this is, again, this is a life or death decision.
And yes.
No, like, medical errors kill hundreds of thousands.
I'm going to pick on the hard of hearing one. Like, all the race stuff aside, if you're in a high intensity thing and you can't hear a patient, what is the argument for that? Diversity?
Yeah, but what about autism?
I mean, remember,
autism? Like, I'm not treating you. Why? I don't like the way you look.
That's a thought crime already. Like, the whole deaf community thing is pretty wild. They kind of view themselves as their own race, like the deaf race.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Oh, this is a whole rabbit hole you can go down. There are deaf parents who have wanted to try to like engineer it so their kid will also be deaf.
Well, you can soft engineer it by, if a kid doesn't hear people speaking at home, so you're supposed to, in the like standbook of non-abuse, basically, in some places in the world, it's abuse if a deaf parent doesn't have time a day to have their kid go to hear people talk.
Yeah, well, some of these people, they view deaf as a culture, basically, and so they want their child to be part of the culture, so they want the child to also be deaf. It's a whole rabbit hole. But to circle back, the big thing here is, again, medical errors kill thousands of people, and this could easily be even a public figure. Like, yeah, they can have their own hospitals, but for the most part, most people are working with the same type of hospitals that we all are, these big ones. And the Mayo Clinic is an elite clinic. And so if they're hiring based on these bizarre diversity quotas, get in the deaf, get in the justice impacted, they really are just true believers in this cult. And that's really, to me, that's a lot scarier than, oh, this is their plan to use dialectical Marxism to undermine the West or whatever. No, they literally just believe this crap. And we have a clip if it's okay to play it. It's longer.
We'll end with this.
But Elon Musk reacted to the tweet that we mentioned, by the way.
It's excellent.
He was appalled. Just the other day, he was talking with Don Lemon in the
recent
now not getting a contract with Twitter, but it was because of this exchange where they talk about lowering standards for doctors. And Don Lemon just literally doesn't get it.
If we lower the standards for what it takes to become a doctor.
You're saying if we lower the standards, but do you believe people are dying because the standards are being lowered?
I don't think that is yet an issue, but it could become an issue.
But the actual evidence in history shows the exact opposite. If you look at how minorities were treated by the medical system, most doctors now are white, and there are lots of mistakes in medicine. So you're saying that white doctors have bad medical care? I'm trying to understand your logic here when it comes to DEI, because there's no actual evidence of what you're saying.
I think that particular thing was referring to surgeons. Let's say a surgeon is asked to a surgeon in training is asked to do a series of operations under the supervision of a senior surgeon, and they get a bunch of those operations wrong. If that happens, and yet they are still approved to be a surgeon, the probability that someone will die, I think, at some point is high.
Okay, I understand that, but that's a hypothetical. That doesn't mean it's happening.
I didn't say it's happening.
You didn't say it was happening.
I said it will.
But
I said if we lower standards, people will die.
So are you saying that if the majority of doctors are white, are you saying that and there are still these inequities, right? And there are still mistakes. Are you blaming DEI for that?
No, I'm very basically saying that if we lower standards for what it takes to become a board certified surgeon. Or, you know, an oncologist or something where the kind of disease we're talking about, if you make a mistake, causes someone to die, then there more people will die than if we don't lower the standards. Therefore, we should not lower the standards.
But why do you think they're lowering the standards for minority doctors or women doctors?
Of course they are.
That's what that's what that article suggested, yes, at Duke University.
Okay.
It's like Elon just.
Elon actually did a great job, though.
But I think Elon is also just like, he hasn't been around someone this dumb for a long time.
You know,
Elon can't believe it.
You know, Elon was always like, if you work for me, I'd fire you. Oh, wait. You do work for me.
Right.
That was what was going on for Elon's like computer metrics. It's like, if you were a Tesla engineer, I would fire.
Oh.
I'm wait.
In news now. I'm in entertainment.
I know. Then all of a sudden, Don's like, I got fired. Why?
Because I was so stupid.
That's not fair.
The most priceless part of that whole exchange. Sorry, go ahead, Jack.
Oh, no, I was going to say, this could be the new standard. What if we applied this to like all media, that there would basically be like, if you said something that was just too low IQ without it being satire or a joke in any way, that you were just gone. Like, if we just stopped having all of these stupid people on TV and media all
the time.
We'd have
to go and fire Mara Gay even years later because of the whole Bloomberg thing, where she thought that Bloomberg could give everyone in America $1 million.
Yes.
I'm always fond of that
yes.
one. That's a classic. And
I love that one.
We got to run. Tyler's got to go train some ballot chasers. I got to go raise some money. Blake, you have to go research 13th century Turkish literature. And Jack, go make sure your book promo is good. God bless, guys. Keep committing thought crimes. Talk to you soon. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.